I remained in Lebanon till the month of June, having seances nearly every day, my mediumship principally consisting of visions, movements of the table and of furniture without my touching them, and of the rapping sounds through which intelligent messages were received. Whilst there, in the beginning of June, all these external manifestations ceased entirely, and I left Lebanon about the middle of June on a visit to Mr. G., at Boonton, New Jersey. I had still visions frequently of the spirit friends of persons who were perfect strangers to me, describing their appearance, and the spirits gave me their names, and the dates of their departure from earth, with answers to other questions of a test nature which their relatives asked. These came to me whilst I was in an abnormal or trance state, and in which I was unconscious of natural surroundings, but with a facility of speech far superior, as I was told, to that of my ordinary condition, and through which I transmitted with readiness the replies of the spirits to the questions asked of them. I was so exceedingly sensitive at this time, that the playing of sacred music would frequently throw me into the trance state, in which I am always in companionship with spirit friends, and that in as perfect and palpable a manner, as in my ordinary external state I am with my friends of this world. Through these means hundreds of persons became convinced of the truth of spiritual communion, and found their skeptical tenets no longer available. I then found, as I still find, that all honest, deep-rooted skepticism rather calls out than prevents the proofs of which it stands so much in need, and atheists, deists, infidels were thus often brought to a belief in providence and direct spirit guidance. About the middle of July 1851, I went to Brooklyn, New York, on a visit to Mr. C. Whilst here I had the pleasure of first meeting the learned and good George Bush, an eminent theologian and professor of Hebrew and Oriental languages at New York. Professor Bush was quite prepared to acknowledge the possibility of such phenomena from his acquaintance with the writings of Swedenborg, and with the subject of mesmerism, and the spiritual experiences of Jung Stilling and others. He was also a profoundly learned man, with a more open and childlike mind than often falls to the lot of those with so much worldly knowledge. He had made, moreover, the greatest sacrifices, by giving up his worldly prospects in the church, in consequence of avowing his belief in Swedenborg's works. Professor Bush took a deep interest in observing the mental phenomena which occurred through me, though there were no external manifestations. The communications he received were of such a nature as to leave no manner of doubt on his mind, as to the real presence with us of those who had gone before. Amongst other names, he told me that I had given him that of an old schoolfellow, whom he had forgotten for many years, and that this schoolfellow referred to a dream which the professor had had on the very night on which the boy had passed from earth, although he was not then aware even of the boy's illness. The spirit of the boy now told through me the whole of the professor's dream, which was that whilst they were playing together, he suddenly saw his schoolfellow taken from him, and heard his voice saying, "I leave you, George, but not forever." A dream of 40 years previously was thus brought to his remembrance. The professor was so strongly impressed with this, that he called on me the next day, and wished to have me reside with him for the purpose of studying for the Swedenborgian ministry. I went to his house, with the intention of so doing, but within 48 hours I saw in my waking state the spirit of my mother, who said to me, "My son, you must not accept this kind offer, as your mission is a more extended one than pulpit preaching." On seeing the good professor, I told him of this spirit message. He expressed regret, but no surprise, and so I returned to my friend, Mr. C., and remained with him till the end of August. I frequently afterwards saw Professor Bush, with whom the most kindly intercourse was interchanged. Here again in New York many were convinced. I returned to Lebanon, but I was not able to see any strangers on account of my very delicate health, and in the month of September my young friend, the son of Mrs. E., fell ill, and I saw the spirit of his father, whom I had not known on earth, though I had frequently seen him, and received communications from him both in the trance and waking state, on my former visit to Lebanon. He came to me whilst I was alone in my room, and standing near me, said, "Ezra will be with me within 3 weeks, go to him." I was then staying with a Mr. F., about 3 miles from the boy. I obeyed the spirit message, and went at once, and found Ezra ill. He wished me to stay with him, but the family thought it was a passing illness, and that I might prolong my visit for a few days to Mr. F. I did not tell them what I had seen, and in about 4 days afterwards they sent for me to come to them, as Ezra was worse. I went, and with his sister I took care of him, till his departure, which occurred on the 19th day of his illness. He was about 18, and had become conversant with the facts of spirit intercourse through me a few months before, and had himself become a partial medium, receiving occasional communications, principally from his father, by means of the rapping and the alphabet. Soon after my first visiting him in his illness, on his sister leaving the room for a moment, he took the opportunity of telling me with perfect composure, that he knew he should not recover, as he had been told by raps on his pillow, by his father, that this was his last illness. This extraordinary composure remained with him throughout, and I had told the family 10 days before of my vision, which prepared them for the coming change. About 2 days before his leaving us, the doctor asked me to break it to him, when I informed him that Ezra had been long aware of it. He doubted this, from seeing him so composed, and I desired him to stand at the door and hear what I would say to Ezra. I then went to his bed, and told him that the doctor had left some news for him. He laughingly said, "I suppose it is to tell me that I am going. Little does he imagine that I have already decided who my bearers are to be." The doctor now came into the room, and taking his hand, said, "My dear boy, if I had not heard this, I could not have believed it. You have everything to make life happy, and yet you are so willing to leave it." A few hours after this, a deacon of the church visited him, who was much opposed to these things, to the extent even of telling untruths and misrepresentations. He argued with the dying boy, trying to take away his happy belief, but fortunately without the slightest success. The boy told him that he willingly placed all his hope in the hands of an all-wise God, and that he felt that the change would be most happy for him. The last evening of his stay on earth, several persons came to the house, and I was told by one of them that it was for the purpose of watching to see if he did not recant or turn coward at the last. I told this to Ezra, and he requested that they should be brought into his room, where I left them for a few hours' rest. At 1:30 in the morning, Ezra sent for me, and I found them still there, he having been speaking with them great part of the time. In speaking to his mother, he said, "Only think, dear mother, I shan't be lame there." He had been lame since he was 6 months old. He asked me to look out of the window, and to tell him what kind of morning it was. I told him it was bright moonlight, and he recalled to me a conversation we had had some months previously, in which he said he should like to pass away in the moonlight, whilst I had said I should wish to go at sunset. He expressed a wish that no one should wear mourning for him. He asked me to take his hand, and whilst I held it, his face suddenly assumed a beatified expression, and he pronounced my name, as if calling me to witness some happy vision passing before his eyes, and the breathing ceased. This is one of the many happy deathbeds which I have witnessed, and such consolation given at a time like this is sufficient proof of the loving wisdom of our Heavenly Father in allowing such things to take place. Some may be surprised to find all apparent prophecy in this case given both to the boy and to me, but perhaps a larger view of spiritual insight may teach us that such is only apparent to us in this natural sphere, and that to those who have spiritual insight and perceptions, there probably was some bodily change in his organism which made clear to those in the spiritual state the mortal character of his disease. Since his departure, he has been frequently present with me, impressing me to write messages to his mother and sister. Sometimes my hand has been taken possession of apparently by him, and used in writing his own autograph. In a letter received from his sister dated the 9th of February, 1852, she says, "Ezra was with you to a certainty when you were writing, for that is his autograph and chirography. The kindness of the advice almost overwhelms me, when I think how spirits watch over and comfort us." The following is an account taken from a newspaper of other manifestations at this time. After several communications had been spelled out, a request was made that the table might be moved, in order to convince some present who were skeptical. Accordingly, very soon slight movements were perceptible, which soon became very rapid. A light was placed upon the floor under the table, and one remained on the table. Our hands were raised so that the ends of our fingers only touched. One end was then moved up so that it was poised on the two opposite legs upon an elevation in the floor, and in this position it remained for a while, keeping time with music, by rocking, and in the same way questions were answered, three movements being considered an affirmative, and one a negative, and after numerous questions were given and as many satisfactory answers received, three gentle raps were heard at the door by a part of the company, and the question was asked if anyone was rapping at the door? And immediately three decided movements of the table were made, and accompanying them were three more decided raps at the door. An emphatic call for the alphabet followed, and spelled out, Spirit's door. The question was asked if there were spirits at the door who wished to come in? Three raps. It was suggested that they were to help in moving the table, and an affirmative reply immediately followed. Then commenced larger and more decided movements, the table being slid freely about the floor, and raised alternately one side and then the other several inches, and at one time it was raised nearly to an angle of 45 degrees, poised on two side legs, and then by oscillating movements the time was correctly kept to several tunes sung by the company. Several unsuccessful attempts were made to bring the table to the floor, which were relinquished for the fear of breaking the leaves. By request it was carefully let down onto one side, and in a moment raised again to its proper position. One of the company then seated himself upon the table, and it was moved about and raised up so as to render it necessary for him to hold on, and this, too, with as much ease apparently as before. Again, by request, it was slid while one was pushing against it in an opposite direction to the utmost of his strength. I remained in Lebanon up to the end of January, 1852, the physical manifestations having spontaneously returned in October previously, and with increased power, and with the new phase of unseen hands touching me and others with whom I was sitting. We frequently were touched by them, and on some occasions a spirit hand was placed within our hands as palpably as if it were a real living hand, though invisible to us. It would remain quietly in our hands until we tried to close them upon it, and even then it was not withdrawn, but as it were melted away in our grasp. I went to Springfield, Massachusetts, an entire stranger, but having heard of Mr. Henry Gordon, a medium there, I asked for and was directed to his house. He received me most kindly, and said that he was about to have a séance that evening, requesting me to join them. I did so, but the contending influences prevented the occurrence of manifestations. Those who were there assembled had to leave at an early hour, and Mr. Gordon accompanied them, leaving me with five or six of his friends who had come in the meantime. Among these were Mr. and Mrs. Elmer, the former being a believer, but Mrs. Elmer having violently opposed it. I was thrown into a trance, made to sit near her, telling her the names of her mother, father, brothers, and sisters, then of her children, all of whom were in the spirit world, and I repeated to her the last words of two of her children. Turning to an older lady in the room, I did the same and so on through all those who were present. Mr. and Mrs. Elmer have since been my friends, and at their house some most remarkable manifestations occurred. I stayed with them for some time, and great interest was excited by the accounts given by the very numerous witnesses who came to see the manifestations. Whilst here the power was very strong, and frequently I had séances six or seven times a day, at each of which as many were present as could be accommodated. Their house was besieged by visitors, and often outside in the street there was a concourse of anxious inquirers. People came from a distance, even from the extreme west and south of America, having seen the accounts given of me in the newspapers of the previous year. It was here that one of the professors of the University of Harvard came and joined some friends in a rigid investigation of the phenomena, and after several sittings they published the following statement of the result of their investigations. The Modern Wonder, a manifesto. The undersigned, from a sense of justice to the parties referred to, very cordially bear testimony to the occurrence of the following facts, which we severally witnessed at the house of Rufus Elmer, in Springfield, On the evening of the 5th inst. 1. The table was moved in every possible direction, and with great force, when we could not perceive any cause of motion. 2. It, the table, was forced against each one of us so powerfully as to move us from our positions, together with the chairs we occupied, in all, several feet. 3. Mr. Wells and Mr. Edwards took hold of the table in such a manner as to exert their strength to the best advantage, but found the invisible power, exercised in an opposite direction, to be quite equal to their utmost efforts. 4. Into instances, at least, while the hands of all the members of the circle were placed on the top of the table and while no visible power was employed to raise the table, or otherwise to move it from its position, it was seen to rise clear of the floor, and to float in the atmosphere for several seconds, as if sustained by some denser medium than air. 5. Mr. Wells seated himself on the table, which was rocked for some time with great violence, and at length, it poised itself on the two legs, and remained in this position for some 30 seconds, when no other person was in contact with it. 6. Three persons, Messrs. Wells, Bliss and Edwards, assumed positions on the table at the same time, and while thus seated, the table was moved in various directions. 7. Occasionally we were made conscious of the occurrence of a powerful shock, which produced a vibratory motion of the floor of the apartment in which we were seated. It seemed like the motion occasioned by distant thunder or the firing of ordnance far away, causing the table, chairs, and other inanimate objects, and all of us to tremble in such a manner that the effects were both seen and felt. 8. In the whole exhibition, which was far more diversified than the foregoing specification would indicate, we were constrained to admit that there was an almost constant manifestation of some intelligence which seemed, at least, to be independent of the circle. 9. In conclusion, we may observe that Mr. D.D. Home frequently urged us to hold his hands and feet. During these occurrences, the room was well lighted, the lamp was frequently placed on and under the table, and every possible opportunity was afforded us for the closest inspection, and we admit this one emphatic declaration: we know that we were not imposed upon nor deceived. W.M. Bryant, B. K. Bliss, W.M. Edwards, David A. Wells. The following account also is given in the Shekinah of 1852, of manifestations occurring at this time, which will show the power which they had then acquired. On the 28th day of February, 1852, while the undersigned were assembled at the residence of Mr. Rufus Selmer, Springfield, Mass., for the purpose of making critical experiments in the so-called spiritual manifestations, the following, among other remarkable demonstrations of power, occurred in a room thoroughly illuminated. The table, around which we were seated, was moved by an invisible and unknown agency, with such irresistible force that no one in the circle could hold it. Two men, standing on opposite sides and grasping it at the same time, and in such a manner as to have the greatest possible advantage, could not, by the utmost exercise of their powers, restrain its motion. In spite of their exertions, the table was moved from 1 to 3 feet. Mr. Elmer inquired if the spirits could disengage or relax the hold of Mr. Henry Fouts, when suddenly, and in a manner wholly unaccountable by us, Mr. Fouts was seated on the floor at a distance of several feet from the table, having been moved so gently, and yet so instantaneously, as scarcely to be conscious of the fact. It was proposed to further test this invisible power, and accordingly 5 men, whose united weight was 855 pounds, stood on a table, without casters, and the table, while the men were so situated, was repeatedly moved a distance of from 4 to 8 inches. The undersigned further say that they were not conscious of exerting any power of will at the time, or during any part of the exhibition. On the contrary, they are quite sure that the exercise of the will is a serious impediment to such manifestations. St. The close of these experiments, it was perceived, on lifting one end of the table, that its weight would increase or diminish, in accordance with our request. Apprehending that the supposed difference might be justly attributable to fancy, or to some unconscious variation in the manner of applying the motive power, it was proposed to settle the question by weighing the end of the table. At the first experiment, it required a force equal to 19 pounds to raise the end of the table. This was fairly tested to the entire satisfaction of all present. The spirits were then requested to apply the invisible power. The balance was now applied in precisely the same manner as before, when the weight was found to have been suddenly increased from 6 to 12 pounds, varying as the mysterious force was increased and diminished, so that it now required a force of from 25 to 31 pounds to separate the legs of the table from the floor. Mr. Daniel D. Holm was the medium on this occasion, and it is worthy of remark that during the performance of the last experiment, he was out of the room, and in the second story of the house, while the experiment was conducted in the back parlor below. The undersigned are ready and willing, if required, to make oath to the entire correctness of the foregoing statement. The original paper was signed by John D. Lord, Rufus Elmer, and 9 others, living at Springfield, Mass. The account proceeds. Lights are produced in dark rooms. Sometimes there appears a gradual illumination, sufficient to disclose very minute objects, and at others, a tremulous phosphorescent light gleams over the walls, and odd emanations proceed from human bodies, or shoot meteor-like through the apartment. These phenomena are of frequent occurrence, and are not accounted for by any material hypothesis, unless, indeed, they could be comprehended under the popular generalization which ascribes the whole to human fraud and delusion. I have seen these lights in all their variety. On one occasion, when a number of friends were assembled at my own house, there occurred a gradual illumination of the apartment. It appeared like the twilight half an hour after the dawn. The light continued to increase for about 15 minutes, and then it gradually diminished. On the 30th of March I chanced to be one of a company convened at the house of Mr. Elmer, in Springfield, Mass. Mr. Holm being present, when the room was darkened to see if the mysterious illumination would occur. Immediately the gross darkness began to be dissipated, and in a few minutes, the forms of all the persons in the room were distinctly visible. Without disclosing her purpose to anyone, Mrs. Elmer mentally requested that the spirits would restore the darkness. And, almost instantly, the change was perceived by the whole company, and soon every form was lost in the deepening gloom. This was the first appearance of these spirit lights that I had seen when others were present, though I had several times seen them when by myself, since their appearance on my first vision of Edwin as before described. Although the physical manifestations had increased, and were so continuous, yet the internal power of vision had not left me, as will be seen from the following, which was published and signed by Mr. S. B. Britann of New York, to whom occurred the fact which he describes. Last winter, while spending a few days at the house of Mr. Rufus Elmer, Springfield, I became acquainted with Mr. Holm. One evening, Mr. Holm, Mr. and Mrs. Elmer, and I were engaged in general conversation, when suddenly, and most unexpectedly to us all, Mr. Holm was deeply entranced. A momentary silence ensued, when the medium said, "Hannah Britann is here." I was surprised at the announcement, for I had not even thought of the person indicated for many days, or perhaps months, and we parted for Altheim when I was but a little child. I remained silent, but mentally inquired how I might be assured of her actual presence. Immediately Mr. Holm began to exhibit signs of the deepest anguish. Rising from his seat he walked to and fro in the apartment, wringing his hands, and exhibiting a wild and frantic manner and expression. He groaned in spirit, and audibly, and often smote his forehead and uttered incoherent words of prayer. He addressed me in terms of tenderness, and sighed and uttered bitter lamentations. Ever and anon, he gave utterance to expressions like the following: "Oh, bow dark! What dismal clouds! What a frightful chasm! Deep, down! Far down!" Exclamation mark! "I see the fiery flood! Hold! Stay! Save them from the pit! I'm in a terrible labyrinth! I see no way out! There's no light! How wild!" Exclamation mark! "Gloomy! The clouds roll in upon me! The darkness deepens! My head is whirling! Where am I?" Exclamation mark! During this exciting scene, which lasted perhaps half an hour, I remained a silent spectator. The medium was unconscious, and the whole was inexplicable to Mr. and Mrs. Elmer. The circumstances occurred some 12 years before the birth of Mr. Home. No person in all that region knew aught of the history of Hannah Brittain, or that such a person ever existed. But to me the scene was one of peculiar and painful significance. She was highly gifted by nature, and endowed with the tenderest sensibilities. She became insane from believing in the doctrine of endless punishment, and when I last saw her, the terrible reality, so graphically depicted in the scene I have attempted to describe, was present, in all its mournful details, before me. 30 years have scarcely dimmed the recollection of the scene which was thus reenacted to assure me of the actual presence of the spirit. That spirit has since informed me that her present life is calm, peaceful and beautiful, and that the burning gulf, with all its horrible imagery, existed only in the traditions of men, and in the fitful wanderings of her distracted brain. At Springfield, also, there were many instances of the sick being healed. I was so sensitive to anyone who came near me in a diseased state, that I not only myself felt but accurately described their symptoms, and the seat and causes of the disease. One case which I remember was that of a person who had been ill for many years with no apparent cause. I brought to his mind an accident which had occurred to him some years previously, and which I was impressed to tell him was the cause of his suffering. When he applied to a surgeon and related the circumstance, the surgeon told him that I had been no doubt correct in attributing his illness to that accident. My own suffering in sympathy with other people's illness was often so great, and was indeed so frequent, that I was often warned by my spirit friends against coming in contact with sick persons. In May, 1852, I went to New York, and was at once received by investigators of the phenomena, mediums having increased largely in number, both in public and private circles. My days and nights were fully occupied by investigators of all classes and conditions. The following account of what he witnessed is given in the words of Dr. Hullock, a physician of New York. Two communications, spoken through Mr. Home as a medium, were read by the secretary. They were given on the 10th inst, at the house of Mr. Partridge. The first was preceded by physical manifestations, intended to identify the spirit about to communicate. The second embraces several topics. Mr. Home said, a male and female were present, who wished to commune with Mr. P. Directly, sounds and motions were made as of a violent storm, the roaring and whistling of the wind, the rushing of water, and the breaking of waves, sounds as if a vessel was straining at her anchor and laboring in a heavy sea, amid which she was held by her chain cables, her joints creaking, and she rolling from side to side. The picture of a shipwreck was so true, that it made the cold chills run over me. The medium spoke of a boat with machinery in it, and went through the motions of dying mid the raging waters and a dark storm. The spirit making these demonstrations to identify her presence, is one whose life was lost by the wreck of the steamer Atlantic, in November, 1849. She gave the following communication, but, oh, it was not death. Bright spirits were hovering around, and bore me to their happy home, but it would be no home to us, if we were not permitted to return and watch over our dear friends we have left behind. To me, the storm has passed and gone, and with it went all the storms of life. From that breaking bark, I passed to one the winds could not beat. It was anchored home in the heavens, and my spirit was nearer God, more easily developed, and was amid influences more pure and holy, just what they ought to be for man's advancement. Kindness never goes unrewarded, and for yours, she wishes to express her deep obligation, not thanks merely, but a deep and abiding sense of it. Be upright and kind, and it will prepare you for brighter spheres. Be patient, as God is. Think of his forbearance, for ages past, with the blindness, the hardness, the perversity of man. If man had possessed his power, he would, in his impatience, long since have annihilated earth and all which inhabit it. Think not of the grave. To us, it is past and forgotten. To you, it is but an entrance into a new and more glorious existence. Oft in the silent night, when the busy toils of life are hushed and the mind is at rest from its cares, we hover around and watch over you, happy, indeed, at being able then to impress our presence upon you. The question is often asked, why have not these manifestations occurred before? Why has not God illumined ages past with these wonderful manifestations of His providence? The reason is obvious.